Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built. And we are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find great coverage of all of the Big 12 teams over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Maybe found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter X. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. This podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best-dressed fan this season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. With over 30 schools to choose from, Charlie Hustle has got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs. You can get 15% off any non-sale item anytime you want to use it by using the code 101215. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodrich. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who doesn't like flesh-colored football pants, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
You know, the Winnie the Pooh look that Iowa State rolled out was still better than whatever the blood curdling crimson that we saw in I don't know, I can't say that actually. Iowa State's was pretty terrible. Maybe the worst uniform here's what I'm gonna say. That was the worst thought out decision made by a marketing team since A&M played with glow in the dark uniforms during the day.
I thought you were gonna go with the poo performance that Texas put together on Saturday. I thought that was where you could have gone with that as well. But
Winnie the Pooh,
I'm not gonna
the poo performance. You know how to turn a phrase, Gerald. I'm just I haven't. I don't have that kind of energy. OU sapped me with their tempo as much as they did Texas defense, I think. That and allergies. So yes, the cleverness, I'm leaving to you this episode.
We'll give it a shot. I am also dealing with some allergies. I've got a little bit of a headache situation happening, but it is okay. Not the only headache we're going to talk about today. Texas went into the Cotton Bowl and did not fully survive the wave of the first quarter emotions, and it led to a loss. Texas loses by 4 in the Red River rivalry. So we'll talk about that, break it all down for you. We'll also got a lot of winning, though, in the down the 40, which is nice. A lot of winners we could talk about toward the end of the show, and we'll obviously close the show out with some bang the drum. So there's a lot we can talk about with this game, but how emblematic is how this game happened, right? The first quarter took like an hour, right? It was back and forth, turnovers, big plays, special teams plays, and then everything settled down, right? And one of the keys of having a successful trip to the Red River rivalry as a team is to really survive the storm early in the game. And Texas struggled to do that. Texas turned the ball over twice in that first quarter, leading to OU points. But Texas still, in spite of the poor play, managed to score 13 unanswered points in the second half to take a lead with 1:17 left, thanks to a 47-yard field goal from Bert Auburn. That final drive took more than 3.5 minutes off the clock. Probably could have taken off a few more if Texas hadn't gone as up-tempo, but tempo was honestly probably the reason why they were able to move the ball, because the OU defense was unable to keep up. So it's kind of a pick-your-poison situation. They gave the ball back to the Oklahoma offense, who goes 75 yards at 5 plays. Dylan Gabriel is 4 for 4 on that drive, including a 15-yard penalty to move them down the field. They score a touchdown with 15 seconds left on the clock. Texas does not go away, though. They go down, put 31 yards up on that final drive to put themselves in field, in Hail Mary distance. They have some guys in the area, but cannot outjump the OU defenders. Texas loses 34-30. After all that, Kyle, I am feeling this one more than any. I think even more so than 2 years ago, feels like Texas just left one out on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I heard some folks who were neutrals watching this game, because this was the neutral game of the week and one of the better neutral games of the year. And it played out as such, right, with great offenses, great defenses, a lot of tempo, a lot of crazy rivalry game wildness. It had all of that, but a lot of folks who were just watching this for pure entertainment, said, you know, it's the type of game you want a fifth quarter of, right? It's a game you didn't want to end when it did because you had a feeling Texas would have found a way to answer back, and then Oklahoma probably had another answer after that, right? It was not perfect, but it was a heavyweight slugfest where, you know, both teams did kind of what they do. And we'll break down a little bit on what that meant for Texas on the offense and defense and special teams sides of the ball. But ultimately, right, it's a game of momentum. When you go into the Red River, it's famously documented, it's split, you know, down the middle. So you're home game and a road game, depending which end you're on. It's a crazy, nerve-wracking, unsettling, you know, electricity filled atmosphere, and there will be momentum swings. It's so unbelievably rare when you have a 49-0 game. Almost every year it's a touchdown game, even when one of the two teams isn't great. They're great in that game. And it just felt like you had to ride the momentum, right? And after Texas got off to you know, a pretty terrible start offensively, they rode some momentum and they got it going. And you know, with Texas defense gassed, you know, it was a lot to ask them to make the stop, and Dillon Gabriel fed on that energy for one final drive. Like I said, to you know, land the knockout punch again. If there's a minute left, maybe Texas is able to come back down and do the same, right? It really was just the team that had the ball with, you know, not that Texas didn't have it last because they got a Hail Mary, like you said, but, you know, realistically with 15 seconds and no timeouts to do that was pretty tough. But yeah, I will give tons of credit to an OU team that I don't think they were perfect, but they rose to the occasion, rose to the moment. It felt a lot of times like Texas was the one, even though they were favored, who had to, you know, have some gimmicks and have some, you know, some rivalry game things go their way to even put themselves in a position to win it late, right? When they hit that go-ahead field goal, there was a couple different things that happened throughout the course of the game. But that doesn't mean that OU will beat Texas 10 times out of 10. I think you play that game and it's, you know, 50-50. It just happened to go the way it did in this timeline. And credit to the Sooners, they got the win. If all things go right, we can see a rematch of this one.
When you talk about this as like a who has the ball last game, you have to look at the number of total drives, right? Like, OU had 12 drives, Texas had 11 drives. And how many gift drives did Texas give OU? Not one, not two, but three. And really, if you don't count, you can or you can't count that 15 seconds, right? So like that last Hail Mary drive where Texas is scrambling to get down the field, like really, they gifted OU a ton of extra opportunities, and that turned out to be a big difference in the game. And we can't really say it otherwise. Like, Texas did not take advantage as well of OU's miscues. Texas responded to OU punts with interceptions and punts, right, and fumbles, whereas OU responded to Texas turnovers with touchdowns. And that really is the big deal. And Texas' inability to put the ball in the end zone from the red zone multiple times turned out to be an issue. And I think we say all that, and really, this is going to be probably my controversial take of the day. I feel like this one, more so than anything else, rests on Pete Kwiatkowski's shoulders in a lot of ways. Mm. And I think PK has been in his bag all year. But I think one of the things that PK has done well is taking away what other teams want to do. And I will just flat say this. He got out-schemed by a Briles. And you'll very rarely hear me praise anybody of that family. And that's the faintest way I could give that praise. But Jeff Lebby came in with a game plan to run the quarterback, to use quarterback draws and quarterback misdirection to minimize and really negate Texas's biggest advantage, which is the defensive line, right? The defensive line can't be as aggressive. They can't be as attacking. It hides a lot of your deficiencies as an offensive line, or at least the talent differential between the two, because Lebby came out and said, we're going to take away the aggression of your offense or your defensive line by using Dillon Gabriel as a misdirection candidate. And so a lot of what they were able to do is predicated by Dillon Gabriel's performance. And we can't say that any other way. 113 rushing yards is the most a PK defense has given up since 2016. Oh, and that was a Rich Rodriguez offense. And then you go back to his days at Boise and they played Air Force. Like, the quarterback has like 1,000 yards every game, but like, that's another conversation, right? So like, that to me is the biggest story, is that Jeff Lebby out-schemed Pete Kwiatkowski and he couldn't really do anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, it felt, you're absolutely right. Like, it felt like Oklahoma won on, you know, there's a reason Oklahoma, when we said we think they're a good team in our preview podcast, but we know less about them than we know about Texas. We know Texas is a good team. And I don't think their offense against our defense negates that. I just think Gerald is absolutely right that they had a plan, and it's something they've been working. You know, they had the benefit of, you know, not a lot of tough games before Texas where they could just focus on this Texas. This was their one. We had Alabama, right? We had Kansas. We had some good games where we had to split a little bit of our time. We didn't not prepare for Oklahoma, but Oklahoma solely prepared for Texas, right? They looked pretty bad probably in some games because they just went out and didn't show much and didn't do much and kept all the good stuff for this week. And, you know, again, is it revolutionary that you're going to run Dylan Gabriel when you don't have running backs who can run the ball particularly well? No, but it worked. It worked incredibly well. It was Jalen Ford's worst performance because it made him look uncertain and unsure, right? A guy who plays downhill and just delivers the boom all the time looked like he was on skates a couple times by Gabriel. He was kind of waiting to see how the play developed instead of going and meeting it, right? He was a little bit timid, and I don't mean to call him out, right? I think a lot of our team, especially in the second half, with that tempo, right, running, you know, close to 100 plays in that game, with that tempo, just looked gassed, looked zapped. Their first 11 o'clock game of the season as well, you know, in that atmosphere, just looked like they were tired, like from the third quarter on. But again, you're absolutely right. It was a brilliant scheme from them. They basically took Texas's superpower, right, which is a lot of linemen, really good linemen, really big linemen, who they can cycle out, right? And in this one, you had, you know, Sweat and Murphy playing their highest snap counts of the season. In the second half, they looked gassed, right? And they couldn't, where we've been able to get pressure from the interior of our line all season, they couldn't, you know, we couldn't do that. We couldn't generate that pressure. And when we did get close to Gabriel, he's elusive enough that he could just slip out, right? He's like 5'9" and a half. He's hard to see back there. He can duck, and he did literally one time duck so he could get lost in the pocket, then squirt it out. And he did it well. When Texas got pressure, he squirted it out. When they didn't, you know, he took the lanes and ran and, you know, got the ball out of his hands quick when it was for sure passing down, and it worked. You know, a lot of third downs, they got chunk plays, and they were from Gabriel's legs. A lot of pass plays where they, you know, got the ball out and we had soft coverage and they took what we gave them, right? To their credit, it was a well-executed game plan. They clearly had constructed for this one, and they went out and just did it.
Yeah, and I mean, that is all we can really say. Like, the OU offense executed its game plan flawlessly. The Texas defense was unable to adjust from it. And I think that, to me, is the bigger story. We'll talk about the offense in just a minute, and there's a lot to talk about there. But I think when push comes to shove, if the defense can come up with one stop at the end of the game, we're talking a completely different conversation. We don't honestly mention the Quinn Ewers interceptions in the same way, because Quinn Ewers rebounded and led the team on a game-winning drive, right? If the defense doesn't put its heels on the end zone on every freaking play on that last drive, like, and this is Pete Kwiatkowski has been unimpeachable this year up until this point. I'm just going to go and say it like, but I think the scheme, especially on that last drive, not being aggressive, sitting back and waiting, allowed a really good quarterback to pick your defense apart. When Dylan Gabriel has time to pass the ball, there are very few that are better than him in this conference. I'll just go and say it like, he can pick a defense apart if he stands back there. Texas did it what it had done in the past and relied on its defensive line to get some pressure, but they were gassed at that point. They had played more snaps than they had all year, and so they weren't able to generate pressure. They dropped 7 or 8 back in coverage, and Dylan Gabriel picked you apart at that. And so that's really what it is. But again, I think if the defense can come up with that stop or come up with one more stop, then we're having a different conversation about the offense, because the offense started slow, but really looked like the offense that we know and love for 75% of the game. That first 25% sucked, but then throughout three quarters, for the most part, the offense was really, really good. We'll say 70%, because I think that goal line stand was in the later part of the game too. But like, I really think there are more so, like, the offensive issues are more glaring, I will say, but I think the defense is, for mine, the more symptomatic problem of this game.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how you want to, like, place injuries. Both units were affected by them. I think Ryan Watts, I before the game, maybe tried to talk myself into, well, you know, we'll have faster corners out there if he's not there. I would have liked one more sure tackler on the field. It did feel like OU's wide receivers did a masterclass in blocking, holding, but blocking really well. Watts is a guy who...
If they don't call it, it's blocking.
That's right. I mean, Jahdae Barron, to his credit, made at least two tackles, like, while being held visibly in front of a ref with 10 yards of space. If he doesn't make that tackle, it's much, much bigger plays. But, you know, that's what you do, right? You know OU will hold. It is coached. It is taught. It is not a feature. You know, it is not a bug. It is a feature. It is how the system literally is built. We've been saying on this podcast every single year, they teach their offensive line to hold, the receivers held. But like I said, it's, I'm not complaining. You know that with OU, when we rematch with them in the championship game, they'll do it again then. That's how they play. But you got to call it. If they don't, great play. But anyways, I would have loved maybe Ryan Watts out there and one more tackler. Does that help stop a couple of those second downs, third downs, you know, a little shorter? Just that experience, would that have been? I don't know, maybe. When Catalan goes out, like, that was tough. Like, this was his game. I thought, you know, all the experience he brings, that we needed someone to come downhill to lay the wood on someone. Like, we really just needed that. We needed a big hit. I think it's in, like, the third quarter to wake that defense up. I think that would have done a lot. Like, I can just picture, you know, that hit he had on Bean, basically, that caused the fumble. But just that point when you bring the wood to somebody and that inspires the rest of the defense, that stuff's contagious. It would have been great to have him. Now, freshman Derek Williams did great. I don't want to, you know, for a freshman being forced into there, did great. But our two hardest hitting defensive backs, right? And you basically add, you know, Ford and some combination of the bigs in the middle. You know, that's your nucleus of big hits right there. You lost two of them, the two who are the rangiest. So that was tough. I'm not going to say that, but yes, I do agree that we never had the answer, the counterpunch, once Lebby kind of got it going and knew what they were doing. But again, look, guys, this would be a much, we'll talk about the offense in just a moment. So we have a much, 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 much different conversation if OU doesn't make two lore inspiring plays, right? You talk about Superman Roy Williams. They have a fourth down, you know, stand that they're going to talk about, right? They have the Bowman hit that forced the Jatavion Sanders, you know, interception at the goal line, that they're going to talk about, right? Good kudos on them. But if either one of those things in the red zone happens differently, if you don't have a dude get lit up and a ball hang in the air for 35 seconds so someone can get underneath and fair catch it, and you don't have the improbable four plays from the 1 yard line after Jordan Whittington makes the play, you know, one of the plays of the year, just shaking dudes off and then sadly gets tackled at the one, you know, and all that for not either one of those or both of those, it's a much different game. So we'll talk about the offense, and I think you can't not talk about those red zone things, but the defense performance, while it still wouldn't be praised, might look a little bit better with 14 more points on the board.
Seven fewer points for OU as well, depending on one of those swings, right? But that's a good segue. You know, I'm a big fan of Parker Fleming, Stats at War. Some people aren't. Some people are. I love his work. But when you look at the, like, he does the did we get beat that bad metric every Monday, and the difference between Texas and OU success rate was four plays. Four plays was essentially the difference between those two teams. And you could point to four plays on one drive. Texas 1 of 3 in the red zone, just a field goal. Stonewalled on the goal line. And Sark mentioned it in his Monday presser that, like, if he could go back and change one, he'd call the worthy pass on third down rather than fourth. He wouldn't have called the same run multiple times. But, like, the plays were there. The players just didn't make it. Like, I'm just going to go and say it. Like, when your defensive lineman, who's giving up, you know, gets stonewalled by a guy he's giving up 150 pounds to, there's not much you can do about that, right? Like, that's just, it is what it is. That's the reason why you have those guys in there, so they can maul safeties that are trying to jam the hole, and they just didn't, right? So, like, there's not much you can do about that. But, like, that was a problem going into the game, that the offense could not punch the ball in. As soon as Jordan Whittington got tackled at the one, my heart sunk, because I knew that this was going to be an iffy thing. And Texas now, after this game, going into it, they were 118th in red zone touchdown percentage. They dropped four spots. Now they're 122. They are literally in the bottom 10 of the country, or I guess bottom 11 of the country, in red zone touchdown percentage. And that is a symptomatic, emblematic problem for the offense. And it's been diminishing returns for 3 years. The red zone touchdown percentage has dropped precipitously from year one to year three. And it's something that they've got to figure out, or it's going to bite them again.
Yeah. I mean, that was the game, right? That I wasted it in the defensive part, but I'll say it again here. That was the game. That was the difference in the game. the defensive side of that was, man, you had them on the half-yard line. What if you got a safety? Or what if, you know, you forced them to punt and got a little momentum for your defense? But nope, you know, they drove right after that, which, again, is the defensive part. But the offensive side of that is how demoralizing to your offense, which had been humming. And all game hummed when it was outside of the red zone. Like, just truly, you look at the yards that they put up. It was a incredibly efficient offensive performance. It just... as all year, as we worried about, as we talked about on this pod in our preview, like, we had to look at money downs and red zones, and we looked at how good each team was, and ultimately it came down more than money downs, because Texas went for it a lot on fourth and got the ones they didn't get on third, which is fine, but it mattered a lot more in red zones, right? Again, I'm not upset at the throw from Ewers for the second interception. Unfortunate as it was, OU simply made a play. Now, would I have liked, like, a second, like, get that ball out of his hand a fraction earlier, literally one fraction earlier before the safety has a chance to go downhill and get there? Sure. Would I love Sanders, you know, going out a little bit more and securing that, knowing he's going to take a pop, but securing that, and does he maybe when he's feeling a little healthier? Maybe. Sure. But look, we said he was good to play, and so we let him play. He didn't necessarily look like it then, or, you know, got worked on a sack in the second half. You know, it wasn't his best game. He was clearly not 100%. But the only really bad play, I think, from the offense that I saw was that first Ewers interception. And it's a throw. He tried to throw that interception to Kansas when it's a double slant and he threw the outside slant. And it seemed like there's something that's happening to Texas cornerbacks in practice. I don't know where that read is coming from, but he looks to throw the outside of the slants every time. If he throws second window slant to Worthy on the inside of those two slants, because the linebacker dove to the outside slant, like, there's a lot of space, maybe even like a lot of space, once he gets through it, if you hit him in stride. Certainly a first down, but absolutely a 20, 30, 40 plus potential there, because the middle was vacated until the safety, you're one-on-one, right? I mean, if you want to keep hitting it, the first play that we hated, Gerald, of running the Worthy screen to open the series in the game, they got Jatavion Sanders in motion, and he just missed on a block to Woody Washington that got Worthy blown up. Or again, he has 10 yards downfield before he has to go one-on-one with a safety, which you like those odds. Those are the matchups you're trying to get. Yeah, you're trying to get that matchup. So, again, a couple times you make a block. There's, you know, a lot of sacks. Ewers got hit way more than I would have liked. Some of that was him throwing those interceptions, and it felt like he got a little gun shy, you know, to throw the ball. He had Worthy on a when they went empty set before the field goal, and the one red zone conversion they did get for a field goal. He probably had Worthy if he slings it in, kind of as they settled into the zone, but you saw him pump fake and then pull it for a little scramble because he's a little gun shy. You know, probably if he doesn't throw those two interceptions, he's throwing that, right? So I understand. I understand what coaching is getting and him trying to be better. But, you know, there was a few, I think there was some of the sacks, right, at Gunnar Helm and Jatavion Sanders each gave up one. Sanders clearly got worked by a defensive end when he motioned over to block and just got bull rushed, right? I think the OU said, if we have Sanders, we're going to blow through him. And they did it every time, knowing he wasn't healthy. Good on them. You know, Cobra Kai sweep the leg. But yeah, I mean, it was really frustrating because there was a lot of good from this offense. If they could have converted again, one, I'm going back now to where I started, or both of those red zone opportunities.
The defense, like I said, the defense, I think, was a bigger problem, but we're singing a completely different tune about the whole thing if Texas is able to convert on either of those. Because when you look at Quinn Ewers, right, I had several conversations about this, right? Like, he played terribly early in the game, but then after the interceptions, 20-31 for 339 and a touchdown, right? He played well enough, even in spite of those interceptions, for Texas to win the game, because they had a shot with 15 seconds. He threw a ball into the end zone that got batted down, right? Jonathan Brooks had another incredible Jonathan Brooks performance.
Yeah,
Whittington absolutely had a career high. Worthy had a great game, right? Gunnar Helm had his massive breakout. Like, the offense played in a lot of ways well enough to win this game, save for two big boneheaded situations. And you know, a lot has been made about the decision to kick the field goal you know, in OU territory on fourth down. But, like, when you think about it, Texas had crossed into Bert Auburn's range and then got sacked out of it, right? So, like, that was the big thing that changed the math. When Ewers got sacked, it took them out of Auburn's field goal range and they had to get back into it. And they did. And so that when they got there, I think the point and the goal was to go down and just continue to chip at it. But when you get sacked, it changes the math. And I don't necessarily 100% still agree with the decision. I think, you know, when you're there's a lot to... I would have loved to see them just hand the ball to Brooks and see what happens at that point. But you probably also end up in the similar situation with OU scoring a walk-off. But, you know, I think your offense is humming. The OU defense is on its heels. So I would have loved to see them in a situation in which they did not get sacked. But when push comes to shove, the offense was able to run the ball when they wanted to toward the end of the game. And that's what Texas has wanted to do all year. And really, there are just a couple of breaks in the game that really changed the calculus for Texas. And we're looking at a loss instead of a win.
Yeah, 100%. It would be, it's almost, you know, a sad exercise to think about how we would be having this conversation with a win, right? Whew, close win. A lot of things we could have done better. But hey, we overcame, you know, our longtime, you know, captain of the offensive line, Jake Majors, going down and having to put a fresh-faced kid back there for his first real, you know, consequential minutes. And he did a pretty good job. There were some things, you know, I think OU appropriately so came after him with some blitzes. He had a little bit of handoff and some zone blocking issues and some stuff like that. But again, and not putting everything on him, but you know, you lose him and still you're able to run the ball like you do, which is fantastic. Still you're able, you know, to mostly throw the ball. Really, they're only like medicine. Once Quinn got locked in and you know, Gerald highlighted it, right? It's the after the mistakes, 28 for 31 for 339. Like that's a great game. Like if you just start there, that's an incredible game. You know, once Quinn got locked in, the only way that you stopped this offense was penalties or sacks, right? That was it. That was the only way that they were able to do it. And even Brent Venables, who was in his bag, as much as, you know, Sark was in his bag and did some things great, called some interesting plays and some, you know, great concepts to get people open. Like, you know, that when they just said, we're either going to go Cuero or Hallettsville here. And they either went Jonathan Brooks or Whittington for a whole drive. And that's how they got to the one. But you know, you got to scheme those guys open and they did. Venables was in his bag, but even Venables being in his bag against a Sark offense, it's not going to stop you every time, right? It's going to stop you at the right times. It's going to be in the red zone where you get really, really strong and you flex up. It's going to be, you know, on a couple blitz packages that get you those sacks that take the ball out. But if it wasn't a sack and it wasn't a penalty, they couldn't stop the Texas offense between the, you know, 20s from basically until the red zone. You fix that. You figure out how to become efficient there. You know, come up with a couple plays that maximize the talent that you have, that you do have, right? All of a sudden, this is back to the lofty of ambitions of this team, right? This is win out the rest of the year, play OU again with something different. You know, you've seen their what they have. They've showed their hand. I don't think Texas showed all of its, right? I think Jatavion Sanders not being there limited a little bit on offense. I think when your center goes down, limited maybe a little bit there. They pulled some stunts without a doubt, but I think they, you know, there's probably a little bit more that Texas can do to respond, and they know what to stop now. And so it's all there for the taking, but they do have to grow. And Sark said it, like, did this team, you know, have they grown each game from Baylor and Big 12 to now? Like, probably not as much as they should have, right? There's still some growth to do. The second half of the season, they're going to have to focus on growing every week, on getting better. Take this bye week, get healthy, but get better. You should be better than every team you play the rest of the way on your schedule, but don't assume that. Go out and use it as an opportunity to improve. Special teams had a rough couple weeks. I appreciate that they improved in this game. The block punt was huge. The fake punt conversion was huge. Bert Auburn, way to go, Bert. Shut the people up. He did it. So that's growth, right? That's they were down, had a couple bad weeks. Now they stepped up in this one, and they'll keep getting better. We need to see that from all of our units. We need to see that from defense. We need to see how we're going to get pressure. 2 weeks in a row now of not getting pressure from what we did do. Teams have figured out what our defensive line is. So you know, figure out how you're going to get pressure, what you're going to do if you're bringing pressure, PK, when and from where are you going to do it? It's not just rush four and get there. That'd be great if we could do that, but it doesn't feel like offenses are going to allow us to do that. So figure that out. Figure out in the offense, what does your red zone offense look like? What is missing? You know, unlock that. And this is a team that still has all the things they want to do ahead of them if they can figure those few things out.
You mentioned growing. What isn't growing are our Podstradamus totals. Kyle and I missed on both of them this week. Sorry, Prize Picks. But Kyle had that Texas would outgain OU by 75 yards on the ground. Did not happen. Thanks, Dylan Gabriel. And that Texas.
If you just take the running backs, that's okay.
But he also had the Texas would have an interception. Didn't happen. I had Texas with two touchdowns on the ground and two sacks. Neither of those happened either. But we'll be back not on Thursday with the preview because it's a bye week. So we will have a preview on Thursday. It'll be our basketball preview this week. We'll have our next football preview next Thursday for the next conference game. But for now, we'll preview basketball. But that brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. So the Texas football team may have lost, but there was a lot of winning elsewhere on campus. Number one ranked Elliott Spazieri started off the winning with the ITA Men's All-American Championships, winning the singles title, 6-4, 6-3 straight set victory over 3-seed Murphy Cassoni, we're going to go with, of Arizona State.
Yeah, he becomes the third Longhorn to win the men's single title at the ITA All-Americans, joining most recently Yuya Ito in 2019 and Chad Clark in 1993 since they started this tournament. Back in 1979, UT now becomes one of four programs with three singles champions. So writing their name in the same place as the Stanfords, Georgia, who had a great run there for a few years. So now they just need to go and pass all those by winning every year. I like it. Beautiful. Well done. Proud of Spazieri and proud of the whole team. I mean, it wasn't just him. There was a great performance by multiple dudes. Micah Braswell made it to the round of 16 singles. And obviously, you know, we know the doubles were really, really good as well.
Later that day, Spazieri tried to double dip the number one doubles pair of Spazieri and Cleve Harper. They actually finished as runners up, coming just short of Ohio State's duo of Cash and Tracy in a 13-point tiebreaker, I believe, Kyle, was what that ended up being.
Yeah, that second set was epic. I think in the tiebreaker, the Buckeyes only held the lead for 6 of the 28 points, but they were able to close with the final two to actually get the win. They won 6-3, 7-6, but it was an epic matchup for, again, Spazieri, who just had the highs of winning before, and they became the first ever doubles finalists since the doubles started in 85. But they just didn't quite have enough to get over the edge, credit to the Ohio State pair, who just kept battling. But again, I think this Spazieri and Cleve Harper specifically is a doubles team to be reckoned with as they go through the remainder of the season.
I mean, this team has a shot to, I think, win a natty this year. I think they're gonna really be in the mix. They've got number one player, number one doubles a pairing, and they've got a lot of just solid talent as well. So I really think they've got an opportunity to do quite a bit. So Texas will be back in action on the 19th of October in Fort Worth for the ITA Texas Regionals. We'll love to have them there. Bring home some more trophies, certificates. I'm not sure what they do for this, but they'll bring home some sort of title and prep for the actual season. Number 8, volleyball beats number 17, Kansas, not once, but twice at a sold-out Gregory Gym. A 3-1 win on Thursday and then a sweep on Friday to continue this upward trend that they've had of late. I'm not sure what has changed, but something seems different, and the team is really starting to find its stride as it hits conference play. And so this bodes well. I'd rather them be shaky early and be solid in conference play leading into the NCAA tournament than the other way around. This feels like Jared Elliott has finally, I think, figured out the rotations and the tuning for this team, and they're really starting to catch their stride.
And this is the best, you know, hey, Texas wins the Big 12. We know that, you know, they do that, especially the past decade. But this is not that Big 12, right? Obviously, there are some good teams brought into it. But additionally, I mean, there's a lot of ranked teams who were Big 12 teams who've just gotten better in volleyball. You know, we talked about Baylor, but Kansas, West Virginia, there's been a lot of improvement all across the, Kansas State, I think, is ranked all across the conference. So Texas has some more chances to prove that. But I think, yes, it's tremendous time to do it. Maddie Skinner continues to just kind of assert herself in that role. She had 18 kills in the first one, had her third straight double-double with 10 digs in that one. And then in the second in the sweep, had 22 kills, hitting 514. Just in the second set alone, had 11 kills. Asia O'Neill, I love this, had 8 kills in the Friday sweep, finished with 4 blocks, and those 4 blocks had her eclipse the 500 career block mark, just the fourth Longhorn to ever reach 500 career blocks. So major props to Asia O'Neill.
Starting the famous guy train that we'll talk about later in Bang the Drum, but Asia O'Neill, famous dads from Dallas, getting Texas moving in that. Texas improves to 6-0 on conference play. They've got a pair of Big 12 matchups against Houston Saturday and Sunday at noon, so Texas hoping to go to 8-0 on the year. On the links, number 7, women's golf finishes 4th at the Windy City Classic. Freshman Farrah O'Keefe ties for 2nd place on the individual leaderboard. Bentley Cotton was 8th.
Yeah, both of them getting top 10s was great. Farrah O'Keefe has been just a revelation. We you know, she was a good recruit, but she has just come in strong in top 5 finishes both of her first tournaments. She was named the Big 12 Golfer of the Month, and rightfully so. Beat a really good field, right? This is loaded with top 10, with 10 ranked teams and 5 top 10 teams. So a 4th place finish there is really, really good for a team that has aspirations. We've talked about this team a lot, and we said, you know, it's a bunch of really great players, but do they have that one killer, that one elite? And if it's freshman Farrah O'Keefe coming in and just being one of the best golfers in the country, we'll take it. But they look like they're figuring it out. And I say that because they have a, right now as we're recording this on Monday evening, they started off their first 2 rounds of the Jackson T. Stevens Cup in Dallas, which features the top 7 teams in the country, UT being the 7th ranked, the highest ranked of those. They are in first place after 2 rounds with a 4-under and then a 12-under today on Monday, which ties for the 12th best 18-round hole in program history. 18 combined birdies through 2 days. They're currently the clubhouse leaders after 2 there. So they are locked in.
Yeah, they're very clearly locked in, and you know, it was a really loaded field, right? 10 ranked teams, 5 top 10 teams, and that's going to continue for them. So 2 more rounds of the Jackson T. Stevens Cup. We'll have more of that for you on Tuesday's show when we preview the women's basketball team. On the men's side, the number 9 men's golf team finishes 9th at the Ben Hogan Invitational, with Christian Moss leading the way with his 20th place finish individually. That field featured all 5 of the top 5 teams and 15 total ranked teams.
Yeah, the field was stacked so much that they actually finished 9th and improved from the number 11 ranking to the number 9 ranking in this one. So, you know, the big dogs were out. Good momentum heading into the Big 12 match play going on right now. They are the number 1 seed in that, and I believe they won 5-0 against Cincinnati to open match play.
Speaking of matches, soccer matches happened this week as well. Texas goes undefeated on the week, a 3-1 win at UCF and a 2-1 win versus Iowa State. Texas actually had to fight back in both of those and decided to do so and extend their win streak, trying to start a new one after they saw their snapped a couple weeks ago.
That's right. They, I believe, they're back to 4 games unbeaten now. In both of these, it was early, first 15 minutes they went down, but battled back against UCF. Lexi Missimo became the program's first 15-15 scorer and assister, 15 goals, 15 assists. And then in the Iowa State game, she actually crossed the 50-point mark for the season, becoming the first player in school history to break the 50-point mark. She broke Kelly Smith's 2004 record of 46 points. So she is just now extending her own record from here on out for the next, I believe, 3 games in the regular season.
Next up for them, they're going to go to Norman, unfortunately, to play Oklahoma on Thursday, and then they will go to Houston to take on the Cougars on Sunday. In the Natatorium, speaking of Houston. Women's swimming and diving takes down those same Houston Cougars 193-103 at the annual Dust Off Your Boots Invitational to open up the season. Texas won 14 of 16 events.
Yeah, this is they're coming off a national runner-up performance, silver medalist performance last year. A lot of hopes for them. It will be very interesting to watch this team, sophomore, All-American, you know, future Olympic gold medalist, Lydia Jacoby, the best right now in the world in her sport, and incoming freshman Jillian Cox will both be utilizing the NCAA Olympic year flexibility, basically an Olympic redshirt, if you will, to focus on the 2024 U.S. Olympic trials. So they'll forego their collegiate competition, but still train in Austin intensely as they prepare for the Olympics. Coaches obviously want to win college championships, but they understand that, you know, the success of these athletes, oftentimes the biggest success that you can possibly have is at the Olympics. So if they're ready, you know, the Texas coaches are going to do everything to get them prepared, even if they take a little bit of a hit. But we'll see. Lost one of their best incoming and one of their best performers last year, who won the gold in the collegiate national championships. So again, long season, there's a lot of talent, but it will be interesting to watch two stars out this year.
They should call that a gold shirt if they don't already. Softball continues their strong fall with a 9-0 win over UTSA. They played at least one run in all of six of Wednesday night's seven innings against UTSA. A 50-1 run differential in those three fall games. They will have their fourth of five fall matches on Wednesday when they take on Texas A&M at 7. You can catch that on Longhorn Network. But that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
If you're not, we usually do an outro to these podcasts where we give our socials media handles. And if you're not following this show, but you listen to it on your podcast feed, then thank you for listening. But you should also go and follow us. If you don't have socials media, just go get it. Just follow us there. We do some of our best work there. It's our snarkiest and I would argue some of our funniest. We've had some great tweets. We've had some bangers. We've had some that Gerald and I thought were hilarious that got like 13 likes. But we've had some good ones, but none have quite compared to when I didn't realize I broke the news. I saw her posted on Instagram. But 1.3, I believe, is the latest million views later. Our by far biggest tweet was awesome. We actually, in fact, even had interaction where a certain athlete reached out and thanked us for posting it on social media, which again is very cool. When you get that that interaction with athletes, it's you know why you hope to do it. But either way, Cowboys legend defensive end Marcus Spears is a big man. We know that. He's on ESPN. A lot of people know him from there. A lot of people know him from his time at LSU. He's a good football player, a great commentator. Seems like a good guy. But he has a daughter who's equally an enormous human, 6'4" outside
strong
hitter.
Strong genetics.
Carey Spears is the number one player in the 2025 class, outside hitter there, following the tradition of the greats of Eggleston and Maddie Skinner, etc. The next great one in the pipeline is Carey Spears, who committed. She announced she will be committing to the University of Texas this week, continuing the famous daughter's line that Gerald kind of alluded to. It's not just her dad who's famous, also her mom, Aisha Spears, was a WNBA top 10 pick. So genetics are strong on both sides for sure. Also, both their parents went to LSU, so I'm sure that one hurts a little bit for them, but great job from Jared Elliott and that recruiting staff. But the coolest thing is, you know, when they're on recruiting trips, Spears can talk to fellow famous Dallas dad, Jermaine O'Neal, while Asia O'Neal is out there setting records as, you know, getting her 500th block for the women's volleyball team. If he makes it over to a soccer game at any point, you know, he could see Tony Dorsett a couple years ago with his daughter, Maddie Dorsett. Madison Skinner, in fact, even her father, Brian Skinner, was a journeyman, longtime NBA and professional basketball player. Dennis Rodman's daughter didn't come here, and I kind of hate that because Trinity Rodman is destroying it for the U.S. Women's National Team, and will continue to be very good. So there's a miss. But if you are, you know, an elite an elite athlete who has a child who's an elite athlete, and it can apply to males as well. If you know, the Arch Mannings of the world would like to come, that's great too. But especially if you have a daughter who's an elite athlete, send her to Texas. But like all seriousness, I do think there's something to say, right? Like if you are looking at it and you're like, man, I had great success and I was able to turn athletics into my profession and make a great life out of it and livelihood out of it, you have a pretty good insight of what you're looking specifically for your child when you choose a college, and especially if it's not your alma mater, as all those people I just named, it is not. It says something about the way that the University of Texas runs its programs, the professionalism, the way they appeal to these people who really understand the sport, understand the business of sports, understand the value of where you go to school and how that sets you up for what's next in life. I think, you know, any big commit we get, it's amazing. I love that. But especially these types of commitments, it makes me feel like we're really doing something right. Shouts to the entire athletic program, to all the coaches for these various teams, the recruiting coordinators. It's a lot of work and a lot of effort to win these recruitments. But again, a lot of it is just the University of Texas selling itself and what it is, and that what starts here changes the world mentality that truly sets Texas apart from almost anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, we talk about kids that want to be developed go to places like Texas. And again, a guy like Marcus Spears, who has seen it, and his wife, you know, they're both have seen what it takes to be elite athletes. And they looked at what Jared Elliott is doing and said, yep, that'll get our daughter to the heights that we want her and she wants to be at. So I think there's nothing greater than the vote of confidence from those types of parents. And I love seeing it. So I'm banging the drum this week on weird conversations and Texas fans coping. Everybody, it has been a tough weekend. We all had an idea of what it was going to be going into it, and it did not turn out the way we thought it was. And OU fans are rightfully spiking the ball, as they should. They've earned it. They've deserved it. But some of the conversation has just been downright weird. And I think Texas fans are struggling. I think we all thought that Texas was going to win them all and go to the national championship and all of those things. And, you know, the CFP is still on the table. The road is a little tougher now. Texas has to win out and look impressive doing that, and need Alabama to win out and OU to win out until Texas plays and beats them again, right? So, like, there's all of those factors. Texas no longer really has it all in its hands. And so the conversation is weird, and it's been copy and it's been awkward. And Texas fans are talking about how Texas didn't play its best game and this was OU's big game of the year and blah, 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 blah. And all of that strikes me as terrible. In a lot of ways. And, you know, we shared some opinions like that where, you know, honestly, I think there's an argument that the two teams that played in Dallas are probably two of the best teams in the country. I would say they're probably both, if you're just ranking them talent for talent and team for team, they're probably two of the top five teams in the country. Like there's no shame in saying that, but I think there is, the only thing I think Texas needs to worry about is the next game, right? Win the next game and everything else takes care of itself. And I hope that's the mentality that Sark and the team takes. And they've had it all year. And, you know, they talked about all of the things that they've missed. And, you know, I think there are some things that I think a lot of people wish Sark had taken a little more ownership of following the game and, you know, on the Monday press conference. But all in all, there is still a lot that Texas can do to fully achieve the things that they set out to achieve this year. Big 12 championship is still very much on the table. You know, OU and West Virginia play later on this year. And so if West Virginia wins that game, then things get a little dicier. But if OU wins out, then Texas wins out, then the two-way tie will work itself out as well. But either way, focus on the next game. Quit worrying about what happened last weekend. The bye week came at a good time for the team and an inopportune time for Texas Twitter talk. but we'll just focus on basketball and all the other things, and we'll pick it back up next week.
There's a long time to get that taste out of that last drive out of your mouth. I understand that for folks who are, you know, fans of this team, who it means a lot to them, rightfully so. I think Gerald is right. Much like the defense, go out and you know, improve, get better. your takes get better. No, I'll just leave with this, right? There were so many times in that game, like Texas throwing a red zone interception and then dropping a red zone interception on the other end. You know, that's tough. That's a heartbreaker. Texas giving up the you know, four plays from the 1 yard line and then letting them drive down the length of the field. They held them to a field goal after that. Like, there were so many times in this game, historically, the two interceptions quick on, that a Texas team folds. They just, you know, fold and you never see them again, and they don't have that mentality. They fought back, and though it was not perfect and we do wish it would have ended differently, like, there was something that the team can hang their head on, and as a fan of the team, you can hang your head on, is you just you got beat in this one. And, you know, did you beat yourself? Did you whatever? Sure. But they got beat. OU won the game. But it wasn't because OU punched them in the mouth and Texas laid down, right? Texas fought back continually, got that lead late. Again, field goal versus touchdown. What happens next? Who knows? But it was a one-score game in a world where they spotted them, as Gerald started this podcast talking about, multiple points, multiple possessions, and they still had a chance with a minute left and no timeouts to stop that team from scoring the game-winning drive and getting out of there with a win. So Texas fought back, and I think fans should be proud of that and proud to think that, again, if they can do all the things right, there's a good chance that a team that showed that much fight is going to have a lot of fire in their belly come conference championship game time. So it's not over. The world is not ended. All we said in the beginning of the season is make the Big 12, conference game was our expectation. College football playoff came much later. We talked ourselves into that. It still would be great, but it's not a lost season if we get to a New Year's Six Bowl, right? It's still improvement. We're still doing the things we need to do. So the sky isn't falling. We're going to live another day. We woke up the next day. The sun rose. It was still burnt orange. Everything's still okay.
Everything is still okay. That's all we've got for you today. We'll be back on Thursday previewing the men's basketball season. We're taking advantage of the bye week like we always do. We'll preview the men on Thursday and then the ladies again on Tuesday before we do our next football preview. But thank you so much for tuning in again this week. If you like what we do, again, you can find us on Twitter. I am at GH Gertage. You can follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on social media at Kyle Carpenter. You can follow Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Believe it or not, OU still sucks.